spandex and bicycle, to enroll in law school, and I was trimming my stand-up comedy schedule and considering getting my master's degree in history. I might have mentioned that to Rudy Schmitz or to one of his friends, because when we spoke later, he quipped, "Perhaps you'll do your thesis on Mingo House. Who knows?" Who indeed? Before I attended my first meeting of the Board of Trustees, Genevieve Corson, a young docent, was assigned to orient me. This meeting kept being perpetually postponed because one trustee had a trade show in San Jose, another a big project with the Massachusetts League of Women Voters, and Rudy had family business in Baltimore, where his father owned Schmitz Brothers, the city's largest department store. "Do they ever actually meet?" I asked Genevieve. "The trustees?" "They have good intentions," she said. "Well, most of them. They're not a tight-knit group. They're all business. They don't socialize outside their involvement with Mingo House." Genevieve was a junior at Shawmut College and had an internship at Mingo House, working Thursdays and Saturdays. I shadowed her for a number of weeks. She was thin, with the bones of a sparrow, and a sharp nose pierced by a ring of all but invisible silver. Her short dark hair was singed with henna, and her wide eyes were colored a liquid brown that seemed to drink you in with wonder and curiosity. On my first day at Mingo House, we had lunch together, just the two of us, at a vegetarian hole in the wall in Copley Square, and decided to take a quick walk in the back bay. Genevieve was bundled in a vintage coat of navy blue wool over a rayon dress printed with 40s cherry blossoms. On the lapel of her coat, she'd fastened a heavy zircon pin in the shape of a comet. She was, she admitted, a thrift shop junkie. Her favorite, Past Lives, was a couple of blocks away on Newbury Street. "How did you hear about Mingo House?" she asked me. I told her. "That Rudy's a character," she said. "How did you hear about Mingo House?" She smiled with both her mouth and her eyes. "My mother brought me, on my 10th birthday, believe it or not. It was my first time at Mingo House and my first ride on the swan boats. It was an ultra-special day." "So which made the bigger impression?" "I was sure it was the swan boats." "Boy, that's a tight call." We had come to the entrance to the public garden, where the lawns shone with a young green and new leaves were swelling on the weeping willows. In the flower beds, pansies trembled in a chill wind, and tulips offered the sun their technicolor cups. The fountains had been partially filled, so that the statues of children, nude, pudgy, with page-boy haircuts, played under bright jets of water. The swan boats circled the little pond, which was the golden-brown color of root beer. "Oh, they're back," she said. The swan boats are narrow, barge-like craft, flat in front with open rows of varnished seats, and ending with a touch of bravado. Huge, swan-shaped shells containing the college students who paddle them with their feet. "Oh, let's take a voyage," Genevieve said. "Are you sure there won't be icebergs?" I teased her. "The swan boats are unsinkable." She began humming the theme song from Titanic, then seized my elbow in her hand and tugged me toward the iron and granite bridge spanning the pond. She was strong for such a diminutive person. "Since this is your first day, the voyage is my treat. Welcome to the Mingo family." Descending the squat steps from the bridge to the swan boat's dock, she took her wallet from her bag, a thrift shop find vivid with gold sequins, and bought us two adult tickets. Our fellow passengers seemed to be all out-of-towners, packing large cameras and small children. The dockside crew requested...